Hello, David Dan. Welcome to Cable.
Thank you for having me.
David Dan, it appears that Trump has been defeated this time around. And it seems very probable that Joseph Biden will be sworn in as president, with his administration, the country, and all of us facing multiple crises, the pandemic, deep and what will be continued, economic troubles, recession, depression, vast numbers of people unable to pay the rent or mortgage, crisis of racism, and of course global warming, greenhouse gas emissions, and more. Maybe the worst of it, there's an obstructionist U.S. Senate who think that if they can hobble and destroy Biden, then they can take power in 2 or 4 years, but under a much smoother right-wing president. And even more on top of that, many of the Democrats in the Congress are quite conservative deficit hawks. All that said, you and your colleagues at the American Prospect, a bimonthly magazine on U.S. politics, you've studied and written about how the U.S. president has great powers and could accomplish a great deal and might, in fact, be able to sufficiently deal with the crisis to stave off the right wing and their increasingly reactionary politics. So, David Dan, give us a general sense of the powers of the president, and then we can talk about how the Biden administration might deal with some of the challenges.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you look at Article 2 of the Constitution, you'll find that in addition to being Commander-in-Chief of the Armed Forces and able to negotiate treaties and staff his executive branch, the primary function of a president is to, and I quote, take care that the laws are faithfully executed. So Congress passes laws and the executive branch and the president implements them. And that's really the main function. It turns out that over a 230-plus year period, we've passed a good number of laws in the United States, and there is ample opportunity to implement those in ways that tangibly benefit the American people. In some cases, those methods of implementation have been clear for some time, and usually when a new administration comes in, they change the interpretation and they implement in their own way. In other cases, there are laws on the books that really haven't been used to their fullest potential in some time, and they have real opportunity there. So, for example, the Higher Education Act, which created the student loan program, gives the Secretary of Education the discretion to cancel that student debt at their will using something called compromise and settlement authority. So this would be absolutely very powerful to be able to reduce the burdens of student debt, which is a lead weight on our economy, and would really help a certain class of Americans who are so burdened that they can't buy homes or cars or participate in the economy in a meaningful way. Another one is through a system known as eminent domain for patents. The Health and Human Services Department can essentially seize a prescription drug patent and distribute it to a generic manufacturer who agrees to sell them at a reasonable cost. This would have a real effect of dramatically reducing prescription drug prices, and that's something that affects not just seniors, although they're affected most powerfully, but really everybody in the country. And so those are just two examples of things that sometimes have been overlooked and other times have been used occasionally to make progress for the public. And ultimately, I think if Joe Biden's going to be successful, he's going to have to show the progress that he's making for people. He's going to have to make it manifest in their lives. And these are two ways to do that, and we have a whole bunch more at our Day One Agenda site at prospect.org.
You know, another thing, of course, is just to change the priorities of the agencies. The Department of Justice could stop running after voting fraud, which they're being urged to do now by Trump. They could, in fact, be taking action against racist voter suppression, of voter intimidation, of supporting Black Lives Matter, the Black Lives Matter struggle, by trying to control the police and force cities and states to actually do something. In the Energy Department, they control how many billions of dollars, maybe 20 or 40 billion dollars of grants, maybe more, depending on their nuclear weapon programs. But they could make a start in creating a clean energy economy, certainly in 4 years. Good start, much more than we've done up to now.
Right. There are so many ways that a president can really affect the trajectory of the economy. We've seen it with Donald Trump, right? I mean, Donald Trump has really only passed one substantial law in his 4 years, and that was the Trump tax cuts. But he made tremendous transformation in all kinds of other areas of domestic and foreign policy, and he did it using the executive authority of the presidency of the United States. And Joe Biden can do the same thing. I mean, presidents make all kinds of regulatory decisions, like who qualifies for overtime pay. They can decide whether or not a worker is misclassified as an independent contractor or whether they're an actual employee entitled to benefits. They can choose whether corporations continue to be allowed to do stock buybacks, which is a situation where they leak out bunch of value to investors rather than keeping it in the hands of workers. There are so many things, immigration policy and foreign policy and trade policy, where presidents control really the entire apparatus, all kinds of environmental regulation, healthcare regulations, financial regulations, where there's a really free hand because Dodd-Frank gives a whole bunch of opportunities there. Corporate power and antitrust. You talk about the Justice Department and their posture. The Justice Department can go after big corporations who are using their power to engage in anti-competitive conduct. They can go after white-collar crime rather than, you know, nonviolent criminal offenders like drug possession. A president can legalize marijuana, for example, by descheduling it from the list of controlled substances. All of this, I should say, is based on already passed laws by Congress. This is not like a dictatorship. This is Congress wrote the laws and the president can implement them. Over the last several presidencies, we've seen Republican presidents really maximize that implementation, and Trump is one example of that, and Democratic presidents kind of shy away from this power that they have the ability to use. So what I'm saying is that Joe Biden needs to act like he has the power he actually has, and use that to make progress.
This is KVU Radio, 90.7 FM, Portland, Oregon. Bill Resnick here for the Old Mole Variety Hour, talking to David Dayen. He's the executive editor of the American Prospect. He's published several books. He's the author of Chain of Title, How Three Ordinary Americans Uncovered Wall Street's Great Foreclosure Fraud. Won the Studs and Ida Turkel Prize. He blogs almost daily on the politics of this country. He's written hundreds of articles. We've been discussing the power of the president with or without congressional support. Tell us about what could be done about the pandemic and the recession without the Senate, in fact, approving it.
Sure. So the pandemic obviously is going to be the key area of focus at the beginning of the administration. The Biden transition has already set up a task force of doctors, people in the scientific community who will give him recommendations for what to do. He's talked about certain things, including building a public health jobs corps, which might be able to be done out of existing appropriations, a force of people to do contact tracing and things like that. He can use the Defense Production Act to ensure that we have the PPE, as well as any kind of drug therapies that we need. What the Defense Production Act does is it informs manufacturers that they have to work on this first. And, you know, they're paid for their work, but it prioritizes production of critical needs for the United States. Those are things that can be done. There are other things like pressuring states to engage in mask mandates and things like that. The biggest thing is going to be dealing with the potential vaccine. So Pfizer came out this week and said that they've seen very good results in preliminary trials of their vaccine. We expect that by the end of the year, Pfizer and maybe other drug manufacturers that are working on this will get emergency use authorization from the Food and Drug Administration, but then the work begins, because what you're talking about is a logistical project that has heretofore been unknown in mankind, really. You're talking about distributing this vaccine to every man, woman, and child in the United States who wants it. You're talking about hundreds of millions of people. It's a two-dose process, so you got to keep track of who got the first dose and make sure they come back for the second dose. It's an absolute logistical bear. I mean, you're talking about getting this stuff from facilities, has to be kept in super cold conditions, has to be distributed to every corner of the United States. We have to figure out how much of the vaccine we're going to have at first, whether it has to be rationed to vulnerable communities and healthcare frontline workers, and make sure that gets distributed, finding the people to administer the vaccine, public health professionals, finding which facilities are going to distribute this. Is it going to be at pharmacies or clinics or pop-up sites, mobile sites, finding the personnel to do that, making sure they're doing it safely, because we're in the middle of a pandemic that is highly contagious. So distributing this vaccine becomes perilous in and of itself. All of those things are going to have to be done in sort of a top-down way, in a fashion where the federal government is incredibly involved in the coordination and the logistics.
Yeah, some of it has to be a top-down way to get all the availability and the money. On the other hand, the American system has great strengths in that every county in this country, some of them depopulated and maybe have one person doing it half time, but they have a health department, and the states all do. Like Multnomah County, I could imagine if they were given the resources to do it, they could establish a distribution program as well as a culture of you've got to take this vaccine and overcome the anti-vaxxers, another problem.
Yeah. You're absolutely right that there are county health officials that are going to be very involved in this, state-level health officials that are going to be very involved. But ultimately, there is going to be a need for a real tracking of this distribution. The vaccine cannot be left on the shelf for more than a couple of days. It has a very short shelf life. Once you distribute it, you got to make sure it's used. And that tracking is going to be absolutely critical. The way it's been explained to me is that the federal government will distribute portions of the vaccine to the states and counties, and then it will be responsible for the states and counties to get it into the arms of as many patients as need it. It's a coordinated response. It's a state-federal coordinated response.
Let's talk about the economy, David. We have to somehow make sure that the homeless rate doesn't go up by 10 or 100 times to be absolutely overwhelming for cities. And we have to get money and food into the hands of people who need it. It's going to be a quite large population. And furthermore, a lot of companies are going to go under. They're productive assets for the country in capitalist hands. And if they don't show profits over time, they go under. The unemployment will remain quite large. People will be hurting. And it will be very, very difficult to make a city that's governable, especially under the conditions of the pandemic. No vaccine is going to be perfect. We're banking on one of them being long-term and successful. Even if it's fairly successful, the economy is going to be in deep trouble. What can be done about that?
The economy is certainly as high, if not higher, of a priority than the public health emergency that we have. We have really a twin emergency going on right now. Some of it's masked by the fact that we have so much inequality in this country, but it's grown worse during the pandemic, and there are millions of people that are really on the edge right now. We did not get a second stimulus package before the election. Mitch McConnell is now talking about doing one in the lame duck session before Biden takes office. His vision of that is very small and very targeted, and there's a pretty wide gap between what McConnell is willing to do and what the House leadership wants in terms of a much bigger bill. The control of the Senate is going to be the real determination here. We're down to two special elections in Georgia being determinative of control of the U.S. Senate. We're either going to get Mitch McConnell continuing to be in control, or at best a 50-50 Senate where Kamala Harris as vice president gets to be the tiebreaker. Either way is not the greatest of circumstances, but you could see Democrats saying that if we win the Senate races in Georgia, this is what we're going to provide in terms of stimulus. And to actually list it out and make that Georgia Senate runoff for those two seats a referendum on the type of economic relief that people can get, and really make it a definitive question. You vote for this person and this is what you get. I think that would be the best course of action. It would go a long way to determining where we're going to be economically in the future. Now, we had back in March the CARES Act, which did distribute a good deal of relief to people in terms of extended unemployment benefits and a one-time stimulus check. But that money is gone now. And many of the programs that were associated with the CARES Act have expired, and many more will at the end of the year, including the moratorium on evictions, as well as a couple of the unemployment programs. So it's vital that we get something in place, whether it's before the end of the year or after. It's absolutely critical, because we're going to see poverty shoot up. We're going to see homelessness. Everything that you said, that just is going to require a ton of pressure on the people in Washington, particularly in the Senate, to make sure they do right by the American people. They are completely abandoning them right now.
Is it possible that some Republicans would buck McConnell and move towards a major stimulus? On the other hand, there's the, quote, moderate deficit hawk Democrats who could also break with the party.
Yeah, it's unclear. Certainly what McConnell has said is that there are a number of people in his caucus who are not interested in any stimulus whatsoever. And, of course, after the election, we saw a couple folks who might have been willing to go along with some form of stimulus lose. That would be Cory Gardner in Colorado and Martha McSally in Arizona. It's really unclear. There is sort of that little group of Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski and Mitt Romney potentially, although I'm not sure about Romney, that might be willing, but there are a number that would be unwilling to allow it to go through. And of course, regular course of legislation, it would need 60 votes if somebody filibusters. And you can bet that someone like a Rand Paul or folks who are trying to rev up for 2024 as deficit hawks would be very interested in filibustering. So this might need a lot of votes.
It seems to me that what we've talked about is both ominous, but there's tremendous opportunity. And then there's climate change hovering in the background. But there's also the Green New Deal. Radical forms could, with sufficient appropriations, unemployment crisis and the economic crisis could be solved by moving towards a green ecosystem, restoring economy, but it would require massive rallies and demonstrations pushing in every direction.
Yeah, in politics is often a time of promise and peril. It's an endless fight. Nothing's ever over. You think you have vanquished Donald Trump, but you really haven't defeated Trumpism, and that still is alive and well in segments of the Republican Party. There is no moment where you can exhale and just walk off the field. The party that figures out how to benefit the American people in a way that they can see and touch and feel is going to be the party that succeeds. And Democrats and Republicans, really neither of them, have figured out how to do that over the course of the last several election cycles. And so we've seen these wild swings back and forth. Obviously, the situation calls for a grassroots movement to really push politicians in the direction of providing that relief. And it would be in their political self-interest to do so as well. So there are signs that Biden understands this to a certain extent, that we have to, in his words, build back better. But there are signs that are more troubling. And politics always has both of those things in hand. There's promise and there's peril. So we got to keep watching and agitating and make sure that we get to a good place.
David Dayan, thanks for talking to us. Keep up the good work at the American Prospect.
All right, thank you.